Welcome to the My Crazy Office podcast with the authors of Working With You Is Killing Me, Working For You Isn't Working For Me, and Mean Girls at Work, Kathy Elster and Catherine Crowley. They're committed to creating world peace, one crazy office at a time. And now, here are Kathy and Catherine.
Hey everyone, I'm Kathy Elster.
And I'm Catherine Crowley, and welcome to My Crazy Office.
Today we're going to dive into one of our favorite topics. What do you do when people at work label you as a certain kind of person? And really what we mean is when you're stuck in a role. You know, roles. My favorite. One of my favorite. Top. Not the kind you eat.
Rolls and biscuits?
But no other not roles. Those kind. The roles we get stuck in at work. Mm-hmm. So our question involves a person who finds that her colleagues don't take her very seriously, even though she holds an important job and makes important decisions.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Interesting role.
Yeah, I was thinking we frequently help clients with that, right? Who get assigned certain roles at work, whether it's the rebel or the scapegoat or the peacemaker. And we really have the opportunity to see how the role limits them, but also how they can break out of it.
You know, it's always interesting as a coach to when to bring that up. Yeah. You know, sometimes I see that people are stuck in a role, but I don't know that they're necessarily ready to hear that or to break free of it. And right. Sometimes that's a hard thing to do. So I wait sometimes to say that. And then usually the person says, oh, it's usually a big wow moment.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So for anyone out there who thinks that they may be stuck in a role, which is you're being cast in a certain light where people assume one thing of you. I mean, families do this too. We get stuck in a role and they keep talking to you the same way, even though you've evolved and you've changed.
Yeah.
So let's just go to our first question, Logan.
I'm in the education division of a healthcare agency, and I've recently become aware of the fact that my colleagues do not take me very seriously. I organize seminars and conferences, and I secure really talented people to speak at those events. But my colleagues seem to see me as a party girl. Our work can be very intense, and I do use humor to cut the tension. I also plan social events. But when it comes to making important decisions for the agency, I'm not invited to those meetings. How do I get people to take me more seriously?
I love this question. This is really, it's so consistent with somebody stuck in the role of an entertainer.
Yeah.
And I confess, I'm one of these people. You know, there's many reasons why you become the entertainer as a child, right, in the family.
Sure.
Maybe
other
roles are taken and that's all that's left, or somebody needs to break the tension.
It's usually the younger.
Right.
Are you the youngest?
I am the youngest and the only girl.
There you go.
And, yeah.
Wow.
So
Two things.
Right.
You got a big job ahead of you.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was adorable.
Of course.
As a lot of, you know, little girls. Well, I don't know, but as a little girl, you know, and I would break the tension, and it worked really well in my family, that role. I really perfected it.
Yeah.
It wasn't until much later that I was in the workplace that I realized, and it took a long time, but I realized that was having me not be perceived as somebody who was intelligent. It took a while for me to understand that. And then, of course, when we wrote Working With You Is Killing Me, I really understood.
Right. Well, we had a client actually very much like this who worked for a medical institution. She did very important work.
And she had a great sense of humor.
An amazing sense of humor.
And she was really a delight to be around because of her sense of humor. And she really, truly was, an entertainer at heart.
Yeah.
But also, on the other side, was very smart.
Right.
But was not being taken seriously. She had an important role. She did her role very well. But she wasn't going to be promoted. She wasn't going anywhere from there.
Right.
That's so frustrating.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I think it's an important role to discuss, because it can go undetected for a very long time. Because who's going to confront the most charming in an office as you've got a problem?
You've got to take yourself more seriously.
Right.
Yeah.
And it really starts with you.
Yeah.
You really have to stop cutting the tension. Like, let in a meeting, let the tension just be there. And don't You have to actually change the way you behave.
So that's what we're saying for this person, is that in order to be taken more seriously, you have to behave more serious.
You have to take yourself more seriously and not, and stop intervening as the party girl. Or even a guy can be in this role too. But stop intervening or stop being sort of that savior known for that.
Yeah.
Right. Let somebody else fill that spot.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump here and jump in here and just say that there's more to the story in the sense that most entertainers are very uncomfortable with tension.
Right.
And very uncomfortable actually in being forthright about what they want, what they need, what they really think. Mm-hmm. That's part of the deflection, right? That humor becomes this way, sometimes of saying what you really think, but saying it in a way that no one gets offended.
So what came first? I know in my situation, what came first was the fact that somebody had to break the tension.
Right.
And I guess I learned very early on that I could do that.
Then you feel it's your job. And that's the part where it becomes a role, because
it was unpaid, by the way.
It was paid for in love.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what you get, and that's what you have to give up. You have to give up being adored if you're not going to be the funniest person in the room, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that what you want to do if you're in this situation is you have to, as you're saying, really kind of practice saying less, right?
So wait, you're also saying that it could be caused not just by a family, but also because you're afraid of fear. You're afraid of tension.
Yeah, well, you get used to being the tension cutter, right? So then when there's a tense moment, you feel literally that it is your responsibility to jump in.
Mm-hmm.
Not jumping in is anxiety provoking.
Right.
Letting people work out their differences or not work out their differences. Similar for the peacemaker. Is nerve-wracking.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the fear that things are going to get really bad really fast, you know? So, and what I find interesting actually about entertainers is they often are the ones who can handle the person with the bad temper or the person who's particularly grouchy or whatever, because they can, you know, kind of prod them with their humor and get that person to lighten up.
Right.
What we're saying actually is that's great, except not always, right? Mm-hmm. And that you have to be seen as someone who can handle disagreement or handle tense situation and not have to be, not jump in and save it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not an easy role to break out of.
No.
And it takes a lot of practice. And I think one of the ways I broke out of it is I actually just started behaving differently at a different job.
Yes.
Ooh.
And I just, you know, was very, very careful not to be that girl. And, you know, and to just do it differently.
Right. And that's...
It took therapy, though. As an executive coach, I do a lot of coaching through that. But at that time, there were no executive coaches. So it took therapy to learn how to deal with tension and just be okay with letting it happen.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, I remember the individual we worked with who was caught in this role. We encouraged her to take on positions of responsibility outside of the agency.
Right.
Right. So you can go to your own conference or join a task force, be part of something, a serious group of some kind, where you can showcase your talents and you're not viewed as the clown or the person.
But I also remember with her, she learned very quickly. And once she was enlightened to the fact that this was working against her professionally, she immediately stopped.
Well, she did, but
and
she also...
people didn't like it.
People didn't like it. That's right. People tried to get her back to her old self.
Mm-hmm. But I remember how courageous she was to just stop. Once she understood it on an intellectual level, she was able to really turn it around. And I think that's true for a lot of people. Whenever we really explain to them the role they're stuck in, they are able to break free of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So
it's knowing. It's really just knowing that that's where you are.
Awareness, acceptance, and action.
Oh, my goodness. She has all of these cute phrases.
All these, like, mnemonics, yeah.
Yeah, so what we're saying here is the first thing is to realize that you are caught in a role for this individual.
You're caught in the entertaining role.
You're caught in the entertainer role, and that your job, if you want to be taken more seriously, is to take yourself more seriously first.
And, you know, I just ask everyone who finds that they're not taken seriously at their job, there's a reason.
You're training them.
Yeah,
you're training them.
You're teaching them.
Yeah.
And it may not be true for you, but it may, you're training them in your behavior to think that you're not a serious person.
You know, the other thing I would say is as you experiment with different behavior, it's also important to realize that people will try to get you back to your old funny self, number one, and to not take it personally if someone says, what's wrong with you? You're so dour or whatever it is. Not to take that personally and then suddenly feel badly about yourself. If someone's asking why you're so serious, that could be a good question.
And how do you answer that?
I think you could just say, no, I'm here to do work. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I'm here for this meeting. Mm-hmm. Right. Or you could say, it's the new me. You can say anything, but you have to be ready that some people are going to try to get you back to your former self. And you must have experienced that some, Kathy.
Right.
And I still experience it in a family dynamic where I see them look to me to break the tension. And I've been called some not very nice words because I don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And so it does, it's not easy to, I mean, I think you can change and move on, but I don't know that you can change everybody around you to accept the new person.
That's right. Mm. That's a time thing. And we've found, I think, with roles that it takes a few months often, right, in a work setting to keep, you have to behave differently consistently for you to be perceived differently. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right, so we're going to take a quick break and then come back and talk more about this topic of roles that we tend to get stuck in.
Ever feel like you or your company could use a 20-minute therapy session? Well, K-Squared has your back. Simply download a K-Talk, plug in those ear pods, or gather a group of your coworkers and feel better instantly. Well, almost. Each K-Talk covers a specific topic and costs a fraction of what a traditional therapy session would. Feeling stressed by your workload? There's a K-Talk for that. Working with someone who's done you wrong? There's a K-Talk for that. Can't ask for a raise, need a vacation, hate your boss? K-Talk, K-Talk, K-Talk. Just go to ksquaredenterprises.com and purchase the K-Talk that fits your situation. Now back to our show.
All right, welcome back, everyone. So we're referring to the roles that we get caught in life and also how they get played out in the workplace. And I just want to read you the seven that we have in Working With You Is Killing Me because, you know, we lay out the seven most common. There certainly are more.
Yeah.
And you can also be a combination of some of these. So there's the hero. We've talked about the hero before, the person who, you know, just takes on every responsibility.
Yeah.
The caregiver, that's the natural psychotherapist in every workplace.
Mm-hmm.
The rebel, that's the person who challenges everything and they get into trouble a lot. The martyr, that's the person who's always suffering.
Yeah.
They're the professional sufferer and... yeah, we're all mad at that person. The entertainer we just talked about, that's the crowd pleaser. And the peacemaker, we're going to spend a little time talking about that. That's the diplomat of the workplace.
Yeah.
The person who just, you know, everybody goes to solve their problems. And the invisible one, which I know we've talked about before. Catherine loves the invisible one.
It just pulls so at my heartstrings.
Yeah, those are the introverts, but the really extreme introverts, the people that don't... they just don't really want to be seen. Like they're in a meeting, but you don't know they're there. They actually know how to hold their energy back.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one. All right, so just the whole concept of roles. We identified this. When did we identify this? Like years ago.
Many years ago, yeah. I'd say over 10 years ago, 12 years ago.
And, you know, it's a big part of our work. It's what we do with our clients, but we don't always address it that way. We don't always say, what role are you? You know, we don't really bring it out. It's just part of...
Well, they taught us in a way, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
We started, someone would say, I don't understand why it is, but whenever there's a problem here, they always assume that I did it.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then we'd ask more, okay, so how does that work and when did it start? And then the notion of the scapegoat really came... to our attention, right? Is this something that's consistent for you? Because that's one of the things about roles is it usually happens in more than one area that you get labeled a certain role.
You're talking about your life and professional.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I think once you're in a role, you're in a, you know, you're on a roll. You're in a role.
Like, on a roll.
There they go.
Right. Well, and these roles also come from, like, the original list, I think, comes from roles that have been identified in... alcoholic families and dysfunctional family systems, but they have been identified because, in fact, those roles work for the family system in some way. Like you said, cutting the tension worked in your family system when other people were angry or not happy with each other. And so they have been defined in other areas, but we were really seeing them and identifying them at work.
Yeah, and they can be pretty obvious. They're not in management school. I think managers should really learn this.
Yeah.
But they, you know, it's not something that's taught. So I wanted to spend a little time on the peacemaker because I think we don't address the peacemaker or the entertainer enough. And I'm so glad
because they don't make waves, right? They don't cause trouble.
They cause trouble mostly for themselves.
Right. Right.
And I have a client right now who's an entertainer, and she's been around a long time. Like, she's gone very far as the entertainer, always wondering why she doesn't get promoted.
Yeah.
She doesn't get taken seriously.
Yeah.
And everybody loves her.
Of course.
She's a total delight, but they don't take her seriously. And recently somebody acknowledged her for knowing that they can count on her, and she was so thrilled that somebody saw what was underneath, because it's not her first card.
Right.
What she shows is the entertainer first.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk a little bit about the peacemaker, and I think somebody at this table is one.
Yes, and I learned early on. I was in the same family system, not the same family system, but in our family system. There were many heated arguments most nights, and I was the person who would jump in and find the common ground.
Really?
So, yeah, even if it was, okay, you both like artichokes, let's see if we can find a little more to agree on here. Yeah.
And it would work?
It would work for the moment. But then I learned that that's what I'm supposed to do, right? And so same of... If you see people tense and you think you have to tell a joke, I might see people arguing and feel like I had to jump in and find the common ground.
Right.
Wow.
And that's not, to your point, it's not good in situations where you need either for people to work out their differences or you need to come down hard one side or another with a strong opinion or a strong point of leadership.
Yeah, if that's the negative to the peacemaker is that they don't like to hold people accountable for what they for anything they may have done wrong.
Right.
Because they're looking to only keep the peace.
Right. Right.
Well, the entertainer also, you know, they can't get into a fight with anyone. They can't because they're looking to always make sure that there is no tension.
Right.
Yeah.
So these are two roles that... So I think what's interesting about them is that the person who's in the role is really the one who suffers more than anybody else.
Yeah.
Everybody loves a peacemaker. Everybody loves an entertainer. That's why Catherine and I are invited to everything. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. We're not that
available.
Nice
anymore. It's a good balance. Good balance.
1-800-INVITE. No, I think that's part of what makes us good public speakers, actually. We are able to... tap into the audience and, you know, deliver fairly heavy material, and but
have them laughing.
Have some humor,
right.
And some fun with
it. Keep the peace.
Yeah, and Kathy is very talented, I think, at being straightforward and dealing with tension now, and I've learned a lot in working with her. I still have a long way to go. But so for the peacemaker, it really is just living with the fact that people can be unhappy around you, and it's not the end of the world.
Really. There doesn't have to be peace, and we can coexist.
Yeah.
We can, and sometimes one individual is going to be mad for a while, you know, or maybe a meeting will end and someone walks out, and that's still okay.
Yeah. I think you're pretty good at it. I mean, we do mediation here. We do a lot of it, and I think you're fine. Sometimes I'm a little shaken at the end when there isn't, you know, a kumbaya moment.
Yeah.
But you're pretty okay with that. Like, okay, well, that's where they are.
Yeah.
So I think you've kind of mastered that. But this is not something that gets mastered without consciousness. You really have to work on it and think about it.
Yeah.
You have to put your time in to changing these roles.
Yeah.
So those are my two favorite. What are your favorite?
Well, I really appreciate...
What?
She's gonna talk
about the invisible.
I feel that the invisible is underrepresented, so I like to appreciate that. Yeah, that role, mostly because I think that they are often quietly the ones who are really the heavy lifters in any work situation. And I will say that the challenge for the invisible one is similar to what we would call the observer, which is that you can be very insightful, but if you don't share some of your insights, you know, if you quietly sit back and judge everyone else, mm-hmm. it doesn't help you, it doesn't help your career, and it doesn't help your work team.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So finding some way to express yourself, even if it's in progress reports or making sure you have one statement that you want to make during a meeting or a conference or any kind of public setting, is really essential mm-hmm. if you want to break out of that role just the smallest bit.
Yeah,
yeah, it's definitely possible. I've seen people break out of that.
Yeah.
So how does that start at home?
Well, usually, let's just say it's not usually in a quiet home that you become invisible.
Right.
It's usually if it's a very turbulent home or if there are a lot of kids and few resources or if there's a lot of tumult between the parents.
Yeah.
That what you learn is, as you put it so well, Kathy, that if you pull in your energy, you'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't add any damage to the situation.
Right.
So protection.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, an invisible people usually think that if they keep their energy in, it will minimize the damage around them. You know, mm-hmm. So it's a little magical thinking, but it worked in the early days, and they're still yeah. doing it.
Mm-hmm. And I think we all have some experience of that, or maybe
sure.
I'm talking about myself. I do remember that as a little kid when there was a lot of tension in the house, becoming invisible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I went and did the dishes.
Well, of course you were useful. I hid somewhere on the stairs.
I did the dishes and ate all the leftovers.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
She did not eat the leftovers. No, I don't believe that.
I did, but yes, it's a very good point. And, you know, there's a little bit of all these roles in each of us, right?
Well, sure. Right.
Hopefully that's what's true, and that's actually what you want to hope for. Mm. Is there a role that you identify with, Logan? Just curious.
I think it's a combination between the caregiver and the invisible, actually.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm very good with one-on-one
yeah.
caregiving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when it gets a little bit too turbulent and chaotic, mm-hmm. that's when I'm okay.
Yeah.
You pull away.
When I'll pull away. And then maybe I'll sneak out and go individually one-on-one and take care of who needs to get taken care of.
Great.
So the caregiver. Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah, he's ready.
No,
she's
you're
ready.
Like you're like the natural counselor.
Working.
You're like the therapist.
Yes. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'm like the one who gets the 3 a.m. phone
right.
calls.
3 a.m.
So,
phone calls.
Oh, so you know everything. People confide in
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
You know everything.
Yeah. Which is nice. I mean, that, you know.
To be trusted that way.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just not so nice at 3 a.m.
No.
When you've got school or work the next
right.
day.
Right.
So what does he have to do?
Well, the caregiver, as we describe, is, I mean, these are wonderful members of any workforce, and they're mm-hmm. very giving. They usually know birthdays. They have, I mean, you don't have this, but they'll have Kleenex or candy or, you know, they're ready to console and mm-hmm. to be a listener. They're natural and they are interested in people's story. So right. that's a gift. The challenge is that in a professional setting, you have to take people, you know, that they're at their job. This is a job. We're working for a company. Here are your assignments. Mm-hmm. And you have to, similar to the peacemaker, hold people accountable. You can't
right.
understand why they're chronically late
mm-hmm.
over and over and over again, mm-hmm. you know. Or you can't, if someone wakes you up constantly at 3 in the morning, just always be available because
yeah.
that's not really helping them. Mm-hmm. It's like tough love. You have to learn tough love.
Right.
That I do.
Yeah.
You have to learn it. Yeah.
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 It's not easy.
Because one thing I've learned, I have a client, I'll tell you about it later, who's a caregiver. And
all fair.
What's that?
All fair.
And then what happens is as, you know, they get older, as we all get older, the problems get bigger.
Yeah.
Right.
That people want to dump on this person.
Right. Well, their problems don't go away and they just get mm-hmm. bigger and bigger and they accumulate, right?
Right?
And then one day, you know, you've like had it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like get yourself together.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
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 Are there any other roles that you two attach onto besides?
Well, I've got a little caregiver.
I have a little of that too.
Yeah, so is Kathy.
Yeah, definitely. And I've had to really learn, you know, tough love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've done the hero thing on occasion, you know, take it on and I'll do it, work all night, or, you know,
in
the family system, take on a lot of stuff to do. I've actually pared way down, and that's the opportunity, right, is to learn how to reel it back. But I was a big workaholic for a period of time.
But I'm sorry.
Sorry, change that.
But I don't relate to all of them.
Yes, no.
Yeah, like, I don't relate to the martyr or the rebel.
Uh-huh.
No, me neither.
So do you? You don't relate
I don't relate to the rebel as a... I have a lot of rebels in my life, so I know that I'm not that. But sometimes I want to rebel against the rebel.
I would not call that a rebel. You're not a rebel, I
can
tell you.
The counter-rebel.
The counter-right, exactly.
And the martyr. Nobody's a martyr here.
Thankfully.
No, it's just too much work.
I've known them. They are a lot of work.
So if you're in a role, or you know someone's in a role, or you've got a situation you think could be a role, please do send us your question or your story to info@mycrazyoffice.co. We would love to hear it and to hopefully offer some advice. That's it. Join us next time for another My Crazy Office podcast. Tweet us your stories and advice about breaking out of a limiting role to AskK2. Vote for us on Podcastland and review us on iTunes. Don't forget to send your questions.
My Crazy Office is produced in New York City at K Squared Studios. Stay crazy.